What would you be willing to give in exchange for your soul? Hello, I'm Dave Thomas, the Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University, and this is The Good Word, our weekly dialogue on things biblical. My conversation partners today, and they have been with me all quarter long, are Daryl Bigger and Larry Viverka, two good colleagues and friends who have been long-time participants in life at the School of Theology. And gentlemen, today we kind of pick up in a way where we left off last week, talking about discipleship as being an experience, something that is active, that takes place in action in day-to-day living. And Larry, you were making a comment as we kind of ended here that I think should be shared, if you remember it.
Well, what occurred to me is, again, I think an outgrowth of earlier conversations we've had about the process and the maturation of the Christian life. I think some of us at times have gotten really focused on Christian behavior and tried to do our best to be loving and caring and care for others, and we've kind of gritted our teeth and wanted to do that
by force of will.
By force of will, I'm going to, you know, be a good person. And when we fail at that, we become very discouraged. And I think the emphasis then is placed in the wrong place when that is happening, because I think really when we spend time with Jesus, when we take him into our lives, when we focus our eyes, and that means looking at him, watching him work, reading these stories as we've been discussing them, when we do that, in beholding him, we become changed into his likeness. And it's a natural, it seems to me, it's a natural outgrowth of our fellowship or our relationship or our following him. He then does that work of transformation. He's the one who takes our hard, stony hearts and makes them flesh, loving, compassionate, soft-hearted. That's his work in my life. And my challenge, it seems to me, is taking that time, giving him that kind of access, turning my eyes upon him and looking in his face and allowing him to do that work in me.
So you in a way are linking this with the process of conversion. I don't think anybody would say I drummed up my willpower to be converted. You know that conversion is widely understood as being, in a sense, a miracle of recreation that God performs in people's lives. And you're saying that actually the growth in grace and the experience of growing to maturity and discipleship is driven by the same dynamic.
Yes.
If we invest our time and commitment in understanding God and the things of God, that the work he does in us through the Holy Spirit happens on its own, so to speak. It's not generated by our efforts.
Yeah, I'm saying that, and that's kind of the what I pick up from Steps to Christ. Anyways, it's really his work. There's nothing that we have to boast about.
And it reiterates Paul's statement in Romans 7, where he says, I don't get done the things I want to do. I do the things I don't want to, and I feel miserable. I'm a failure at that. And who's going to deliver me from this horrible dilemma? And he turns to God, not to self-discipline.
That's certainly the conclusion that this is what God does.
In Mark 8, there is that very searching question that Jesus asked, that what would you give in exchange for your own soul, so to speak? In other words, what would it profit you if you gain the whole world and lose your own soul? How does this play into discipleship?
Well, I don't know that Jesus' question is much is one that he's asking for an answer as much as a statement, you know.
Oh. Well, I mean, like a rhetorical question.
Yeah, he's making a point that the whole world is not worth what one loses when one loses one's soul.
Mm. Yeah, even if you were among those, presumably in his audience, who didn't believe in any life after this life, the question still has relevance.
Sure.
If you lose the identity of who you are as a person, is it worth that sacrifice, even in the short term? Mm. And certainly in the long term, it would be the case, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I was interested, I looked at this lesson, there are a number of stories that are interested. First of all, Jesus' healing of Simon Peter's mother-in-law. And, you know, here she is gravely ill, and he healed her, and she immediately responds by getting up and preparing food and sustenance for the people who were there. I wonder if that's an indication of a certain kind of gratitude that emerges from people who encounter Christ. I think also of that story that we know of in the Gospels where there was a paralytic who was brought to Jesus by his friends and they couldn't get there, and so they climbed up on the roof and they lowered, they took the tiles off and they lowered him down. And I've heard many discussions that focus on the entrepreneurship of the friends who wouldn't quit and the tenacity, and they went. But it seems to me, as I read that story, that the real focus is on the paralytic who was healed, who it says that when he was healed, he left there glorifying God. You know, so there are these passages, and there are many other stories. I think of the blind man down by Jericho, who I think of the man at the I guess that's after Jesus, but even the healing of the man at the temple gate, he went walking and leaping and praising God in spite of what all the people said, to be quiet and so forth, like this. Discipleship seems to be associated with activity, but activity that arises from a great sense of gratitude for what God has done. Is that an observation that you would support or have opinions about?
I think, yeah, your focus on the response is central. I think of Matthew, and Matthew isn't necessarily doing chronology, but he has a Sermon on the Mount from Matthew 5 to 7, and then he begins Matthew 8 by illustrating the response to, the Jesus conclusion is this story about building your house on the rock of his teachings. Mm-hmm. And Matthew then proceeds to illustrate that by stories in Matthew 8. And the trilogy that he has initially includes Peter's mother-in-law with two other interesting characters, the leper and the Roman centurion. And you think of his writing to his Jewish audience, you know, if these three people, a leper, a Roman centurion,
and a woman,
and a mother-in-law, woman, mother-in-law, can get it right, you know, why, people can't. I mean, and Jesus, and that's where we find these remarks about Jesus, I have not found such great faith in all of Israel.
Yeah, and actually that's an astonishing thing to have said that about a Roman centurion.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I suppose on the social scale, he was way down.
Yeah. But it's the response, it's the faith response of these individuals to Jesus' message and to his ministry, and that absolute trust, blind, unquestioning trust that they placed in him.
And yet reasoned trust, I would say. I don't know if I like blind.
Well, all right. It wasn't blind because it's based on listening to him and taking seriously his word. You're right.
So in other words, it's a thoughtful response to what Jesus has done that leads them to a complete trust.
Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. Good corrective.
Now, is this what puts the disciples of Christ at odds with the world? You know, so often we see the disciples and the followers of Christ juxtaposed against the world. Is this the ingredient that, you think of Jesus' words, how the gospel, he came not to bring peace but a sword, he came to divide brother from brother, children from parents, and so forth. You see the Christians in trouble with their society very, very quickly. Is this the ethos that is the root cause of that?
Is what the response you mean to the
Mm-hmm. response that wells up of gratitude that seems not to care about any social strictures.
Mm.
Is that what puts us at odds?
I do think that you are characterizing a difference. I think the person who lives by this world's order is one who is focused on getting and experiencing based on one's ingenuity, on one's drive to succeed. And the measures of success are who has the most toys or who's managed to accumulate the most wealth or power or influence, which can be a good or bad thing. It depends on how the person uses these. But the focus is certainly different. And on the one hand, when I'm focused on amassing wealth and power, I'm not dancing for joy and singing the praises of the man who's been forgiven and healed of the maladies that have
structured
his life.
You're more in contention with other competitors, right?
Yeah.
So it is really an indication that we've overcome the distractions in life, and that the whole focus is on that spontaneous celebration of who God is. That's the distinction, it seems to me, that other pieces of life have melted into the background. And this is bold, loud forefront. And everything else is inconsequential now.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the words of that well-known hymn, "Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face," and then the next line, "And the things of earth will grow strangely dim." That is a genius statement in my opinion, in the light of his glory and grace.
Right.
Strangely dim. It seems like I'm very intrigued and blessed by what you said earlier, Larry, about this being the work that God does in us. It's not something we generate for ourselves. Mm-hmm. You were going to say something there.
Well, and it isn't that these people's lives, the routine of their life didn't change all that much. Peter's mother-in-law went right back to doing what she would have done had she been well in the first place.
And I suppose the centurion did too.
Presumably, no indication that he resigned.
Well, one of the things he said about Jesus, it was this power to command. And he went back to giving orders.
Sure.
Yeah.
So life took on its former routine, but with a whole different point of view.
Yeah.
That's what separates us, it seems to me.
Wow, well, this is a very interesting loss to think about here. And I suppose it would be good for us to contemplate how we might improve our own experience of discipleship. And it sounds like the most important thing we could do is be opening the inner dimension of our lives to the work of God and the work of the Spirit. And those other things will kind of adopt their own priorities in a very very natural way. Thank you very much for a lively and stimulating discussion. My thanks to John Campbell, our faithful engineer, and our thanks to you, our listeners. We love to hear from you from time to time, but thanks for listening today. For The Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.